This is CliffCentral.com.
CliffCentral.com on Thursday, the 10th of January. It's the start of a brand new year, but so many of the things that we are going to have to deal with in this year are hangovers of the extraordinary maladministration of the past couple of years, and nothing fits that bill more than Eskom. I've often called Eskom the most badly run company in the world because it's the only company I can think of that charges you more for a less reliable, less quality product, and then asks you to use less of that product too while trying to charge you more every time, and is administered in a monopolistic sense by people so incompetent that they cannot even exploit that monopoly to the advantage of the state, who is supposed to be the chief shareholder in all of this. It is such a – the only word that comes to mind is clusterfuck, that I can't imagine – any place in the world being run more badly, any entity of a corporate nature, any entity of an NGO nature, any entity of a pure state nature. It is that absolutely abominable. But to understand these things properly and perhaps to give us the real facts rather than just more opinion, the best person, the person most well suited and most well placed to talk to us about this is Ted Blom. He is an energy advisor and the leading contributor at Energy Expert Coalition. He's also got his own business that he runs, Ted Blom and Associates, and we'll talk a little bit about some of the things that he has already said in the media that have got and garnered him a huge amount of attention. Ted, it seems everywhere you go, people are sending out like WhatsApp clips of you on all these various channels talking about what a disaster Eskom is. I don't think a lot of people, though, have completely comprehended what a danger the maladministration of Eskom poses for us going forward. A lot of people look at it and they go, oh, well, you know, if Pravin goes and has a meeting with them, they turn off the load shedding, which we can discuss in a moment or two as well. This is really the biggest danger for South Africa. This is the greatest threat to our prosperity, to our ongoing sovereignty, to all kinds of other things.
Absolutely, and that's already been acknowledged by the World Bank institutions and as well as the ratings agencies. So if you stand back a minute and just think about it, Eskom's footprint extends to 90% plus of all economic activity in South Africa and, in fact, Southern Africa. So whether you're running a school, whether you're trying to run a farm, whether you're trying to mine or smelt or whatever you're trying to do, in fact, whether you're trying to just get to the office, Eskom plays a role and impact on your life. From when you wake up to when you go to bed and even afterwards, because your alarms and everything are run on electricity. So let there be no mistake as to the impact of Eskom, either making it or breaking it, in terms of the South African economy.
Well, they're on the verge of collapse, both operationally and financially, and they're seeking to recoup their losses by further burdening citizens in this country. Those are the words that you used when you described it. You're on a quest to make citizens more aware of what is happening at the power utility. First of all, how easy is it for you and for anyone else, as a result of you being in there and being able to be a conduit for information for us, how easy is it for you to get this information? I mean, you've had to work quite a long time and against a considerable amount of opposition to even find out what was going on at Eskom in the first place.
Okay, so I've got the advantage in that I used to work for Eskom in the late 80s, when it was a top five utility in the world. And I ran the firefighting department, if I can put an acronym to it, and that was to sort out problems before they became issues.
So in other words, they can't bullshit you. You know the place inside out.
Absolutely. So and that department resorted under the finance department, and I was seconded to the generation department, which is the guts of Eskom. Because all that Eskom really does, it turns coal into electricity. That's all it does. All the other activities, all peripheral activities.
Well, that's not true. They were running a home loan scheme. They've been doing a million other things. It seems Eskom was almost like a proxy parent for thousands of South Africans in sheltered employment.
In fact, too many South Africans. By my last estimate, their headcount was about 35,000 overstaffed. So yes, it's an organisation that's fallen off the rails. It's really become an entity in its own mission to satisfy its own people's needs.
When did this begin? You mentioned how when you were there in the first instance, it was one of the top utilities in the world. It had an incredible reputation. We were supplying electricity not only to all the businesses and the people in this country already, but we were supplying to other African countries too. We had a surplus. They were making a profit.
They weren't making a profit in those days. No, they were differently structured. Up to 2001, Eskom was a non-profit entity constituted by its own act in terms of the legislation. And all it had to do was break even. That's all. It didn't have a shareholder. It just had stakeholders.
Hmm. Okay, so how did that work in terms of how they were – were they generating enough money? Were they breaking even?
Look, they went through their patches of difficulty in the sense that if you're not making profits and you're not reserving for big activities like building a new power station, you will run tight. And the cost of the last power station under the non-profit regime was Majuba at about 13 billion rand. And that contrasts with Medupi, which should have today cost 32 billion and is running at 170. So you could see that that was a much tighter regime. And all it had to do was just keep the lights on and keeping them on as cheaply as possible. All these other peripheral sort of goals that Eskom had nowadays in terms of quotas and achieving, soaking up the unemployment and so on, I mean, that wasn't thought of. The way to run the economy is to run it as lean and clean as possible because that creates the most opportunities for other businesses.
Particularly utility, which is really, as you say, your job is fairly simple. It's to generate electricity. Now, let's just look at where it started to go wrong because under that old regime of non-profit, where did it begin to unravel? We look at SAA, for example, we can fairly clearly see when the leadership changed and when things started to go awry in the finances. Did the same kind of thing happen to Eskom, or was it much more gradual?
No, it was actually much more momentous. In 2001, Eskom was converted from a non-profit organization to a normal company under the Companies Act for profit. And that was a bid by the ANC government to grab control of what they forecast would be a massive cash cow. They did a research paper in 1998, the White Paper on Energy, and in that they determined that they wanted to take control of Eskom, and they did so. Let's just go back a few years. In 1988, when I joined Eskom, privatization was on the board, and the big fight was whether the government should own the shares, whether corporate industry, the large mining houses should own the shares because they were the biggest customers and had paid the most money for electricity, or the third leg was labor. Now, that was under John Marie, and the privatization move was then aborted because they couldn't get consensus as to who would inherit the Eskom shares. In 2001, the government did the Eskom Conversion Act, and Eskom became corporatized. And suddenly, you had all these civil servants now become big-time general managers and executive directors with fancy titles and even bigger checks. And that's when the wheels came off, because from then on, the motivation wasn't to serve the South African economy, but to service themselves and their new shareholder, the government.
And that hasn't worked out so well, if you think about it. What they forecast as being a big cash cow has turned into a massive loss cow and has almost dragged everything in this country down with it.
It did have a few profitable years where it did spin out money to Treasury right up front in the beginning. But then they started playing games. They started reducing the stockpiles to generate free cash flow and improve profitability and all sorts of things that you wouldn't do if your main focus was to generate cheap, reliable electricity.
So where are we at the moment? In terms of the idea of who owns Eskom, who runs Eskom, and how well it's being run, because we've seen a number of CEOs come and go. We've seen a number of boards hired, fired, and blamed for all kinds of things. Of course, we haven't seen anyone go to jail. We've seen people leave with very nice golden handshakes. Who have been the biggest beneficiaries of the largesse of Eskom's, in inverted commas, success, and who have been the biggest losers in this story?
I think the losers are very easy to identify. It's every South African sitting without a job or under tremendous financial pressure because of the cost of keeping an household running. If they reinstituted Eskom's controls and brought the costs back to where they should be, which I've estimated at about 40 cents a kilowatt hour. Based on a long term.
What are we paying now?
Well, you're paying in excess of a rand. The minimum amount is a rand. If you're in Cape Town in winter, you're paying up to 5 rand a kilowatt hour. The actual direct cost of generating electricity is around about 30 to 35 cents a kilowatt hour.
So you even built in a little profit and said 40.
I said 40 just to be safe. Okay. So that is what I call the pre-corruption tariff. That's where we should be today. All the excess is because of inefficient management and corruption. And so that amounts to billions. In fact, the number I've got is 1.4 trillion. It's been sucked out of the economy illegally.
It's been stolen.
Well, and misappropriated.
So we know about Brian Molefe, and he had to pay back some money just a little while ago. Who are the other people who we don't talk about?
Well, I don't know if Brian has paid back the money. The last time I heard, it hadn't happened yet. But the rot started around about 2007. And there's a couple of issues, as I highlighted in Parliament during my testimony, that are not common knowledge. In 2007-2008, Eskom had embarked on doing a whole host of new power stations.
Our minister at that time was Alec Irwin.
Yeah, he'd been from 2006 when I was rehired by Eskom. That was the time that Irwin was in charge. That's the year after the bolt hit the Kuburg.
That's right, and we will never forget him because he was the guy who told us that this disaster that became known as load shedding, and we'd never heard that term before. Load shedding, which started to affect us, we suddenly had power outages in normal commercial hours during the day, during the week. These are things that very rarely happened before then, and they happened in isolated ways. Alec Irwin told us, oh, this is called load shedding. It's going to be happening. It's part of the ANC collective responsibility thing that we had some problems around administration. Okay, that was what he tried to very softly place the blame on the ANC.
So it's very simple. The 2008 load shedding, I called 4 days before it happened. And the only reason I called it is because I saw a stock sheet and I saw that the pantry was empty. There was no coal in the pantry. And so you didn't need to be a genius to call that one. And I made the call to the executive, including Mr. Damas. And I received the message that I must stop being an alarmist and I must shut up. And that was, from there I went to Macro and went and bought my first generator. Because I could see that the trouble was going to hit the fan. And that was self-imposed, as I said in Parliament. Because what had happened is, under the emergency mandate that Eskom executives had given themselves, they entitled themselves to buy coal without a tender. And that had run rogue from 2001 to 2007.
Why is that a problem? Just explain it to people who might not be entirely, adept at understanding the process of tenders and why government has to put things out to tender.
Okay. So in 2001, Eskom was hit by a catastrophe insofar as the Majuba power station that it had built had to close down its own new coal supply operation, the coal mine, mm-hmm. because of inadequate geological work done on the mine. And the
there wasn't enough coal in the ground at
No, no, no. There was plenty of coal. The problem was rock intrusions. Okay. And the mining method that they'd suggested was not suited to rock intruded coal seams. So what they should have done really is just change the mining method from long wall to normal board and pillar mining, which is conventional mining in South Africa for coal. But to save themselves the embarrassment, they closed down the mine. And that created a situation where you had a brand new massive power station, the largest in the fleet, without coal supply. And then on the basis of that, the board declared an emergency and said that they needed to now buy coal off the street to keep this power station running. That was a six-year mandate. So it gave them 6 years to find a solution to the defunct Majuba coal mine or colliery. 6 years later, what had then been an emergency, a genuine emergency, had evolved into a massive scam, which I'd estimated in 2007 amounted to more than 8 billion rand a year.
Of them buying coal, as you say, off the street, but effectively that would have meant that the board of Eskom or certain people within Eskom were able to just do a deal with whoever.
Well, it's a little bit more sophisticated than that. By the time I uncovered this corruption in 2007, it had actually become a formal syndicate, organized crime. There were 54 people in that syndicate, and it was headed by a very well-known person.
Are you allowed to say who that is?
I would rather say that I'd say that for the Zondo Commission because I don't want to make myself liable at this stage.
Which you're going to?
In the next month or so, I'm in sort of semi-formal discussions with the Zondo Commission. Unfortunately, they want very crisp pieces of affidavits and testimony, and they want evidence. And I don't have the evidence in hard form because we're talking about 17, 18 years of exposure to maladministration and corruption. Now, on the occasions that I've gone back into Eskom, I've been able to find the evidence, but it's been a very difficult task. So I will need some assistance from the Zondo Commission, and I've had discussions or informally with Advocate Pretorius, who's the evidence leader,
right.
And we will make the impact at the right time.
Okay, but you're telling me that there's a syndicate that was set up all those years ago.
2007.
That started the corrupt coal situation, which we've then, it's metamorphosized into this, the Gupta Tegeta situation and a whole lot of others. But let's just go back to basics for a second. We don't have a shortage of coal in South Africa.
We've got more than 400 years worth of coal.
So that's not a problem. It's the supply.
And the location.
And the location. Where is most of our coal located?
Okay, so when Eskom was started about 100 years ago, most of its activities were focused on the Mpumalanga coal fields. Mm-hmm. We've got different coal fields. We've got the KwaZulu coal fields, which are more anthracitic, so they're not suited for steam coal. Mpumalanga coal is excellent, excellently suited for steam coal and A-grade export coal. And then the balance of the coal is in the Free State, but very deep. And then the largest proportion that's left is in the Waterberg, about another 400 years worth of coal in the Waterberg.
Sure.
But the quality isn't fantastic. So what's happened is Eskom was built right at the mine mouth in Mpumalanga, and they had zero transport cost for coal. That will have to change going forward because the Mpumalanga coals for Eskom are basically depleted. That's what we call the coal cliff. Which happened around about 2015 to now. And that's why even if Eskom does think it's recovered the situation, the fact of the matter is, until it develops another 20 new coal mines, it will remain in a load-shedding mode. And that take at least 5 years.
Do we need... what do you need for this? I mean, how much coal are we talking about? You talk about geography and where it's located. I'm imagining that the costs involved are then setting up new mines, transporting that coal... What kinds of how complicated is this?
Okay, so it's a little bit more complicated. And if the people had acted at the time when they were told to do their jobs, it wouldn't have been a crisis. The part of what I uncovered in 2007 with uncovering the new coal roadmap was the coal cliff of 2015. And Eskom, I gave a report into Eskom. Mr. Damas went public, and you can go and Google that. He claimed that he would build 40 new coal mines in 2007. And in fact, he publicized that on 11th of August 2009. From 2009 to 2019, Eskom has built zero new coal mines.
So who's supplying the coal?
They've got the long-term contracts, which are all now steadily coming to an end. And then that opened up the window, the shortfall opened up the window for the off-the-street spaza shop type of trading where the Guptas manipulated the situation.
And who are those main suppliers? Is that the syndicate that you were talking about?
Okay, so the non-long-term contract suppliers is about a group of 30 smaller operators. And really, a lot of them are mom-and-pop type of mining operations. They've got coal stockpiles, and then they run out, and then they've got, and then they run out.
But are these people reliable? I mean,
absolutely not.
Yeah, so this is why we end up with intermittent.
Shortages.
Yeah, intermittent
absolutely.
Coal.
So you talked about the size of the problem. Eskom burns roughly 129 million tons of coal a year. It's more than 10 million tons a month. So it's 10 million bucky loads
enormous
full of coal a month.
10 million bucky loads of coal a month.
Yeah.
So you need to tie down those supplies. This is like running a clothing factory and not having cotton.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
How could this not have been a priority? What kind of incompetence are we talking about here? Because we know about people who are in dereliction of duty. You know, someone maybe leaves out three things on the asset register occasionally, or maybe they don't include the petty cash 1 month, or those are things which in companies happen from time to time.
Sure. You know,
it's a oversight. There's a small irregularity here and there. But what you're talking about is people who don't even understand the basic reason why they're there and why that company exists.
It's the core business of Eskom.
I mean, is this, I shudder to say it, but these are new level stupid.
Absolutely. And you've got a new board that has been in there for a year, of which only one person had previous exposure to the energy industry. The rest couldn't spell Eskom if they tried.
Do government, are they aware of the severity of this? Is there someone in government who gets how serious this problem is?
Well, I would have thought the president would be aware of it, because he himself runs a big coal operation, or used to run a big coal operation, which was a significant supplier to Eskom.
Mm. How convenient. I'm not going to say any more than that, but it seems to me, you know, a lot of people talk about how, you know, he's this brilliant businessman, but when your main business partner is government, I don't think anything you do could be considered brilliant in any way. So let's just talk for a second about whether or not they're taking it seriously, because when Pravin went to have a meeting in December after we had some more load shedding with Eskom, suddenly the load shedding stopped.
Well, only just, by hook and by crook, because on the 21st of December...
It seems to me we're having our feet held to the fire. Was that an attempt by Eskom to extort money out of us?
Well, in the past it has been. Every time that there's tariff discussions, Eskom tends to put a lot of pressure onto the public and suddenly creates all sorts of crises. They've cried wolf a number of times over the last 10 years, and I've caught them with their pants down on several occasions. The occasion in December, this is real. There is a real coal shortage. The fact that the new board, has in 1 year not realized that there's a big issue on coal and got rolled up their sleeves.
What do they do? Are they meeting every week? Because if there's a crisis of this size, what are they doing? Who are these board members and what the fuck are they doing?
Heavens alone know what they do. They just sit there and rubber stamp documents that has been put before them. I don't think one of them applies one brain cell.
That's terrifying. This is the single greatest, we said it at the beginning, and most immediate looming crisis in our economy. We're talking
about...
It's
not looming, it's here.
Well, it's here already. We're talking about growth, and we're talking about how we're going to bring about the fourth industrial revolution, and you hear politicians in parliament talking about all these grandiose schemes to get people employed. This is a way to solve a lot of the problems. And if it isn't dealt with, it's a way to immediately scupper all of those dreams and hopes and ambitions.
The country. This country will
be
scuppered.
You would think they would be appointing the most competent, most brilliant, decisive, capable people to the board, for example. Who is on the board?
Okay, so
how do they choose the board of Eskom?
The new board was appointed irregularly, as far as I'm concerned, by Mr. Ramaphosa on the 29th of January 2018. That was after he got rid of the Molefe board.
So you would think he'd put in people who could fix things.
I would have thought that he would have at least applied his mind and gotten some advice as to who could possibly add value to the board. But as I said, out of the whole board, and it's a large board.
How many people on there?
10 to 12 people.
Yeah.
No, it's a large board. And of them, one person had previous energy experience via the regulator. And even there, I mean, I must put questions on that, because for 10 years, I'd cried about corruption and inefficiency in front of that regulator, in front of that particular person. And in 10 years, I was never given a moment's notice, and they hadn't applied their minds as to whether I was right or consulted me afterwards to bring evidence or anything. They just ignored my cries of corruption. And now that person survived that regulatory job and is now on the board of Eskom.
Do these people earn a lot of money on the board of Eskom? Or they paid a small kind of stuff.
So I don't have the board, the non-executive director rates. I don't have that. But the CEO gets paid 8 million rand a year. And in fact, before that, Mr. Dalmas' final check was 22 million rand for a year's work.
So we're paying people extraordinary. I mean, the president earns, according to the...
Three million.
These numbers are... Even 8 million... For running things badly.
For somebody who has no energy experience.
Who's running things badly, demonstrably badly. I mean, Ted, this, this sounds, are you just a, are you a prophet of doom? I mean, it sounds to me it's like almost unbelievable that the scale and level of this problem. Why are you a lone voice?
I don't think I'm a lone voice, but I might be the most persistent voice. I've been doing this for more than 10 years because I had a contract extension to fix up the 40 coal mines that Mr. Damas referred to in 2009. Less than 12 hours before my contract extension, I got a call that Mr. Damas had boycotted my extension of my contract, my 10-year contract, which is already agreed. So they terminated with no notice. And I then said, well, the reason they're doing this is because of the corruption that I've uncovered and the inefficiency and the incompetence. And I then started going to NERSA and started getting vocal about the corruption within Eskom.
So, you had a dog in that fight, but did you ever just think to sue? On the basis that they irregularly terminated your contract?
I did try, and unfortunately I was let down by my lawyer. He was going through a divorce and had personal issues and let the claim lapse.
Shit. That could have been a good payday for you, considering how much Eskom shell out to all kinds of other disasters that they've run badly. So what other things are – we found out the other day that they had a scheme where they were – loaning employees money. They were like acting like a bank, effectively.
Well, there's a whole lot of schemes within Eskom. One of them is the housing scheme, where they give massive subsidized housing. And even that is fraught with corruption, because when they privatized a part of that, a lot of the Eskom executives went and bought up homes at historical cost.
I was going to say, let's just be very clear about this. They're not talking about the average guy who's a mechanic who works in one of the plants. We're talking about executives trying to fleece the system again to their advantage by letting the company pay for things that were for personal use.
Including the car scheme, which was unlimited.
A car scheme?
Yes, they had a car and petrol card scheme with unlimited, uncapped expenditures. And that was running it over for the top 27 executives. That scheme was running it over $500,000 a month. You could run a taxi fleet off that.
I don't even know where to start on these. You called it a massive Ponzi scheme waiting to collapse.
Absolutely, because what happens is they go and raise money, and to raise money they have to show that they're going to be more profitable, so they push up the tariff, and then the money disappears. The 1.4 trillion has just disappeared.
What kind of an increase are they asking for at the moment?
60%.
So in other words, for every rand you're spending with them now, it could be around 60.
Over the next 3 years, yeah. 4% a year has already been approved, so what's outstanding is 15% a year, and that's what's on the table at the moment.
But how does it work? Because I know people who are paying 4 or 5 or 6,000 rand a month on electricity, and then I know people who live in exactly the same house who are using exactly the same amount of electricity who are paying 10, and I know people who are living in the same kind of place and they're paying 5.
Absolutely. There's massive irregularity.
How does this work?
On the billing side, let's just get down to basics. Average four-person household around the world during winter and summer averaged out uses about 1,000 kilowatt hours a month. That's a normal household with a swimming pool, a normal stove, electric geysers, etc. Now, the cheapest tariff that Eskom has is around about 1 rand 10 cents a kilowatt hour. And then they operate what they call an incline block. So as soon as you go over 300 to 400 kilowatt hours, which is still part of your normal consumption, 1,000 kilowatt hours.
Sure.
As soon as you go over 300, they start penalizing you by a higher tariff. And your base price will then change from, for example, 1 rand 10 to 2 rand 50 a kilowatt hour.
Doubling more.
Yeah. And then if you go over 600 kilowatt hours, which is still within normal household consumption, you could start going over 3.50 a kilowatt hour. And if you're in Cape Town, they then have winter and summer tariffs. If you're in Cape Town in winter, you're paying up to 5 rand a kilowatt hour.
So this is a private company, in inverted commas, we know it's a parastatal, but it's a company essentially establishing its own stealth tax system.
Absolutely. And to just confuse everybody, there's over 900 tariffs in South Africa.
For Eskom?
For electricity. No, Eskom and the municipalities.
Oh, yes, because then we've got them involved as well. And most of them haven't paid Eskom, which is why they're also in the situation.
Well, there's the other side to the story, and that's where I'm doing a lot of consulting at the moment.
Tell me.
A lot of the municipalities, the arrears, let's just get start with the basics. The arrears are about 17 billion as at the end of last year of municipal debt to Eskom. My estimate is that about 60% of that, about 9 billion, is irregular billing by Eskom.
Wow. And that would mean that, that actually those municipalities are not as crooked as Eskom is.
Absolutely.
If we had to establish a hierarchy of crookedness.
Absolutely. So what I'm finding with the municipalities that are consulting me at the moment is that they're getting penalized and hit by excessive tariffs by Eskom, but their own tariffs are determined by NERSA, so they don't have the capacity to manipulate their own tariffs to recoup the excessive charges from Eskom's side. So that's why they then set with the unpaid bills, and a lot of the municipalities then say, well, if I can't pay them in whole or completely every month, I'm just not going to pay them at all. And that's where we are at the moment. So of the 17 billion, about 6 billion is delinquent behavior by the municipalities. They're saying, well, I don't have enough money to pay them in total, so I'm holding back and using that money elsewhere. And 9 billion is justified non-payment because of irregular billing by Eskom. And Eskom, of course, is fighting this tooth and nail. I mean, they've had a fat go at me at the last hearings, but the story isn't over. We'll end up this matter in court.
Now, you say that you know they've been having a go at you, but you've also put yourself in the way of danger because after your expose, your initial expose, you've been receiving all kinds of threats, and you've had people threaten you and your family. You've got messages to tell you to keep quiet.
I've had people on the roof of my house.
What?
I've had an attack on my house.
What happened?
In the middle of the night, I just heard footsteps on the roof. And then when I got up and sounded the alarm, the footsteps disappeared and ran through my security guard's tent in the dark. They didn't see the guide ropes. I ran through his tent and jumped over a 7-foot wall.
So what kind of messages have you been receiving, and have you been able to identify who these people are, or have you made any progress in terms of making yourself and your family more safe?
Well, obviously, I've taken some precautions to the extent that it's possible. But at the end of the day, I'm a firmer believer in my maker. And if it's time for me to go, it's time for me to go. In fact, there's very little I can do to protect myself against the third largest military force in the country, which is Eskom Security Forces.
Is it the third largest private security force in the country?
Yeah, absolutely. It's a military. It's a military. The SADF and the SAPS, and then Eskom's got the largest security force here.
That's probably another reason we're paying so much for electricity. And for what? I mean, I can understand that you need to keep power stations safe and you need to keep ordinary citizens out of there because the sabotage threat is a real thing.
Oh, but they've had surveillance on the unions at Medupi. I mean, that's been in the press, covert surveillance and interference and misinformation, et cetera, et cetera. No, they run a whole security force.
And is there any person who you think at Eskom at the moment is trying their best to keep things going and to make things work and to improve things and to clean out corruption? I mean, is there anyone who's been there in the last 5 years who you held out a whole lot of hope for that they were going to do the right thing and fix this thing? Why is it in everybody's interest by the looks of things to just keep it spiraling?
Okay, so I think there are some genuine people who are around, some old-timers who know what the core business is of the entity. But because of various political interferences and racial slurs, et cetera, et cetera, these people's hands have basically been chopped off. Of late, they've brought in a former Eskom general manager, and he's trying, I think, reasonably hard to keep the ship going forward. But even he doesn't have the correct experience. He comes from the transmission side of the business, not the generation. As I said, you're right up front when we started.
That's the guts.
The guts of the Eskom operation is generation. It's buying coal, turning it into electricity.
We hear about the downgrades by all the ratings agencies, and the biggest threat to the country is that those downgrades will make it impossible for us to borrow money to pay for things, but you've already said that Eskom is at the heart of all of that. And in fact, they've been named as the chief culprit in so much of the economic decline that we're seeing and the uncertainty that we see in our economy.
Okay, so let's get back to some sense of reality. I said right up front this morning that the pre-corruption tariff of Eskom electricity should be no more than 40 cents a kilowatt hour. And I've got the numbers, I've worked it out, I've had it audited, reasonably verified. If we get a task force in at Eskom, because it's not a one-man job, and we clear the corruption, we clear the headcount issues, we get the efficiency a little bit back to where it was. I mean, at the end of last year, more than 50% of the generating units in Mpumalanga were offline, broken. It's like running your four-cylinder car on two cylinders. It's just not imaginable. Now, if we can get back to 40 cents a kilowatt hour, I guarantee, I'm personally prepared to put my head on a block, that we will create more than 3 million new jobs in this economy within 18 months. We will resuscitate the mining industry. We will resuscitate the smelting industry. We will then encourage energy-intensive users to come in and invest in this country.
But you've been asked to talk to Parliament. You're going to the Zondo Commission. So people are asking to hear what you have to say. What happens after that, though? I mean, what happened after you spoke to Parliament? Did you get an interesting reception from them? Were there people in Parliament who asked the right questions? Do you feel there's the political will to act upon this information?
Okay, so I was called back to Parliament the second time for more details. So
okay.
That indicated
that's a
they
good
had
sign.
Some interest. And I had a very good relationship with the evidence leader, Advocate Fanara, who I think tried his best under very trying circumstances because you had people like Mrs. Brown, etc., and Mugabe who were ducking and diving and doing all sorts of things. So I think they tried to do a good job. I think they could have done a better job if they'd been better prepared, if they'd had previous pre-briefing sessions to set up the agenda and to set up the questions, because a lot of the stuff can get quite technical. As far as getting Eskom fixed, I mean, the state president announced a new board on the 29th of January last year. They've now hired world consultants, Boston Consulting Group, Lazards, etc., to give them advice. But every time, and even some of the local auditing firms that I'm aware of, but every time they're hiring people who don't understand the company.
But you're here. Why don't they just ask you to come in and
no,
you would
myself
do it?
And somebody who's now deceased, who knew Eskom even better than myself, made our services available pro bono. Those were accepted by the then executive of Eskom, and that was the last we heard from them. That was 5 years ago.
Zondo Commission, what's going to happen there if they take you seriously? Are we going to see some people go to jail? Are we going to, I mean, because it's a commission, they don't have the ability to have an order of court in terms of a finding and a sentencing.
Well, they'll make findings and recommendations, which then have to be followed up by the state organs like the SIU and the NPA. And you've got a new person in the NPA starting in February, so hopefully that new brush will sweep cleaner. I think there will be some revelations from my side to the Zondo Commission, which will rock the boat.
Well, it sounds like it. You even have the identity of some of the people in the syndicate that you're speaking of some years ago.
And there's more people that have never been fingered before.
Huh. Ted, the obvious thing here that irritates me, just because I like to know that there is balance in the universe and that bad people get caught out, what has happened to people like Brian Darmus? Where's he now? What's he doing?
Okay, so he's got a nice cushy job. He works for Mr. Patrice Motsepe.
Oh.
And he's chief executive of Mr. Motsepe's renewable energy division.
He better be careful, because Brian Darmus doesn't have a great record in terms of actually understanding the balance sheet. Poor Patrice might end up on the bones of his backside for employing this guy.
No, I think they're on a very good wicket at the moment, because you'll recall that earlier last year, the Minister of Energy signed 27 new renewable energy agreements on one day.
What kind of renewable energy is this? Is this wind? Is this solar? Is
both.
This? Okay.
Okay, so you need to be a bit circumspect, because I'm now going into a very dangerous territory. Eskom is being forced to buy this renewable energy. Okay, so for every rand of renewable energy that Eskom is being forced to take, because they have preference according to the agreements that have been signed by Mr. Khadebe and his predecessors, every rand that Eskom has to buy from them means a rand less sales from Eskom's own electricity.
Hmm.
Eskom is sitting with more than 500 billion.
So it's a net loss to them.
A loss of revenue, absolutely. Yeah. And even more, because Eskom carries the transmission losses. Mm. So they buy one kilowatt hour and about 15% of it's lost in transmission. Eskom carries the financial and credit risk, because whoever buys the electricity might not pay for it, but Eskom has to pay the renewable supplier. And then the other problem about the renewables is that bid window one is probably running at over 4 rand a kilowatt hour.
So
and Eskom's own cost of generation is 30 cents.
Grossly inflated.
Absolutely.
And basically profiteering.
And it's guaranteed for 20 years, and it's indexed to the inflation rate.
And again, the loser is the end user.
Absolutely.
The loser is not the person providing
the
service.
So the three biggest players, and now I'm really putting my head on the line, the three biggest players in this renewable space is the president through Centuka Energy.
Okay.
Mr. Motsepe. Through his African Rainbow Energy.
Sure.
And the third member of that so-called syndicate would be Mr. Khadebe, because they're all brothers.
Yes, they're all related.
Yeah.
Through marriage. That's interesting. So tell me quickly, what can an ordinary South African do? How do we protect ourselves from this looming threat, this extant threat? How do we make our own electricity supply? I mean, you joked about going to Macro back in 2007 and buying yourself a generator. Is this what we're required to do?
You'd be stupid to stay on the grid, because I've done projections from now to 2030, and even if Eskom gets a 25% annual increase every year, by 2030 they'll still be bankrupt. Their business model is broken.
What's the best way of getting off the grid for a person who just has a house that you say 1,000 kilowatt hours?
Okay, so you probably need to look at your consumption configuration.
Mm-hmm.
I would certainly take my hot water geyser off the system and put a solar system in. Those work quite well. Mm-hmm. I've been on one for more than 3 years now, and I've had one day where the water was tepid. The rest of the days was fine. I take my swimming pool off. If you do those two things, you probably cut your electricity bill by more than half. The problem is cooking. And the washing machine and tumble dryer, dishwasher, washing machine, tumble dryer.
Okay.
Because they consume quite a lot of energy. So you'd need to set them to only come on if you put solar panels in, when the sun is at its peak. And you can probably do a full conversion for under 80,000 rand if you buy judiciously.
Okay. Well, that's something we can all do, because this is not going to end well for Eskom.
Absolutely not.
There's no light at the end of the tunnel for them. Unless, as you say, a task team's brought in and cleans
out. And they changed the business model. The business model since 2001, when they corporatized, is broken.
All right, Ted, you've ruined my whole day.
Thank you. Sorry.
It's very nice to talk to you. What an amazing revelation. I mean, for all of us to just be blindly stumbling in the dark is kind of ironic enough. But for Eskom's own leadership and the government to not be taking this seriously is a supreme concern. We almost abdicate responsibility for these things and hope that someone somewhere is paying attention, but it seems that even the people who we've elected to take responsibility for this are not. And if they are, they're probably involved in dodgy dealings around it too, which is even more concerning. But there we go. There's what you need to know. Thank you, Ted. Can we follow you on social media? Is the way that we can keep up to date with all the things that you're up to?
Okay, so in the last month, we've opened up a webpage.
Yes.
A Facebook page.
Yes.
So I think I'm on Facebook, tedblom.5, for whatever that means.
Okay.
We are on eco.coza is our webpage, where people can subscribe to our newsletter free of charge.
All right. Eco.coza.
Yeah, that's eco.coza.
Okay.
And then I also offer a service for people who, and we didn't really cover this miscreant billing, but I offer a service to try and fix up billing that's gone wrong. I do an initial survey free of charge, and then after that, if there's something I can do, I would then provide a quote.
Very good. Well, thank you. I hope it goes well for you. I hope it goes well for us. And I hope Eskom can get their act together. Otherwise, we're in big trouble.
This is CliffCentral.com.